KNBA, of course, keeping you in tune with her community. Local author Don Reardon didn't know if his first book would be a success, and he certainly didn't expect to find himself listed alongside writers who've been turning out bestsellers for decades. But last week, he learned that's exactly where his book, The Raven's Gift, put him, in the Washington Post's list of 50 notable works of fiction for 2013. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes recently had a chance to talk with Don.
My name's Don Reardon. I'm an associate professor at the University of Alaska, Anchorage, and a writer.
Now, the Washington Post gave an award to your book. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it was, they named it on the 50 notable fiction for 2013.
And
so I got to join the ranks of Stephen King and John Grisham and Margaret Atwood and some other amazing writers that I totally admire.
And how did your book end up there?
It was reviewed in the Washington Post in mid-August, and then those critics that review for the Washington Post choose kind of the best books of the year, and I was fortunate enough to, or honored, I guess I really should say, and fortunate to have them select my book, The Raven's Gift. I don't know, as a kid who grew up on the tundra, it's kind of a big thing to have my book there. I never dreamed it would happen so early.
So, tell me about growing up on the tundra. Where are you from?
I grew up out in southwest Alaska on the Kuskokwim River. I lived in a couple villages out there and then went to high school and graduated from high school in Bethel.
And this book is about a non-native married to two non-native teachers. And I mean, I've read the book. I actually got it when a friend of mine gave it to me when it had been published in Canada.
And oh, cool.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, it's a very powerful, powerful book. Pretty bleak, but
yeah.
Hopeful at the end.
I saw the hope.
Yeah. So how did this story idea evolve?
Well, I think a lot of it evolved just from my concern over what I see happening in rural Alaska and the kind of this idea of Alaska as a resource state, and we have so much money, yet there's people just in really living in impoverished third world conditions, and I just, the disparity of wealth has always kind of bothered me. And then at the same time, thinking about Alaska as a whole and how reliant we've become on the outside world when we used to be so self-sufficient, that just always kind of concerned me. So the story just really grew out of this question of what if something bad happened and no one came to help? And then when all those kind of scary bird flu projections were set to, if that went pandemic, it was supposed to hit Alaska, and still could, apparently. And so that just got me thinking, and so that's where I just sat down and started the story. And the way that you read the story, where it opens with a character climbing up over a frozen riverbank and looking at a village that's been destroyed, that's where I started the story. I didn't know where it would go or what it would be from there. I just had this idea of what if something bad happened and no one came to help.
Now, did you do a lot of research about societies that have collapsed and sort of what happens to them?
I could say no to that, but then at the same time, I think my whole upbringing was research and listening to stories from elders who survived those epidemics out in southwest Alaska and understanding how scary that must have been and what they did to survive, and then, you know, starting to research more of what happened when the epidemics hit Alaska, and then just also kind of being a huge fan of the older civilizations and traveling to some of those, like the Mayans, and seeing some of those ruins and thinking about, you know, like what would that look like if that happened to us? And so that's kind of some of the research I've done. And then the stuff, the outdoor kind of Alaskan stuff in the book, that's just from life. And I've kind of joked when I've taken people home and they're looking at the bush from outsiders' eyes. It kind of looks like at times the world's already been destroyed there, when a lot of it's just living, you know, like you've got scrap snow machines outside your house because there's nowhere else to put it, and you might need some of those parts later down the road. And a lot of people don't quite understand that. So I was kind of trying to bring some of that to view, too, in the novel.
You were trying to bring some of that to what?
To view. So that other people could see that from the outside world.
So, and then you have, the introduction of the older woman into the story. How did that happen? And I mean, do you see her as, is she symbolic of something?
Yeah, I think she's symbolic of just the elders that I've got to learn from in my own life that I've appreciated learning from, and just their resiliency and the knowledge that so many of them have. You know, they're not just walking libraries. Some of them still possess, I think, some of the secrets to really how to be a human being that our modern culture has lost. And so I think that character, she appeared and was kind of a surprise to me. That's how I write. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't plan it out. And when she appeared, it was kind of, the story's scary at that point. And here this old woman appears, and it set me at ease. I knew things would ultimately end up okay. Because that's just how you feel when you're around those people. They just carry a wisdom that's unbelievable. And I wanted that to be a part of the story, I think.
So tell me about the success of the book. It's been published in 4 countries. Do you know what the sales figures are? And who are the people who are picking it up and buying it and interested in reading it?
That's a funny question. When you're a writer, you have no idea what the sales are, I think, unless it's an actual bestseller, and you could say, well, it's number one on the list. I don't actually know, like, specific sales numbers. I just know that it's done okay. The publishers seem to be happy. It was first published in Canada, and then Australia, New Zealand, and then France, and then finally here in the U.S. It's been put on a couple lists. In France, it was on, like, Elle Magazine's Top 10 Summer Reads, and has received pretty much, I don't think I've had a bad newspaper review of it yet. So that's been good. And, you know, I don't know in terms of sales, it's definitely not a bestseller yet, but it's been selling good enough that we're hoping that my next novel will actually find a publisher too. So if your first book doesn't do well, it's going to be really hard to get a publisher.
So can you tell me anything about the next book?
Sure. It's also set in Alaska, set in Southwest Alaska. It's a village that's moving because of climate change. It's called Moving Salmon Bay, much like so many of our villages that are being threatened by climate change. It's the story of a village that's getting ready and packing up and just actually having to move because it's time to go.
Okay, and when's that due out?
As soon as I get a publisher. I have no idea. We've had to kind of wait to see how this book does, and now that it's done well enough, at least, it didn't just hit the book's shelves and not sell, there's a chance that we'll be able to sell this next book.
All right. Well, thanks so much for talking with me.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thanks very much, Jocelyn, and congratulations to Don Reardon on his inclusion in the Washington Post list of 50 notable works of fiction for 2013. Good stuff. Programming on KMBA supported by Great Originals, a full-service digital printer providing business printing services including color process and DocuTech for small Alaskan companies. Learn more online at greatoriginals.com. Coming up on 8:59, and that's it for Morning Line for middle of the week. My name's Danny Preston. Thanks as always for your company. Up next, it's National Native News, followed by Native America Calling. Of course, you can join the show toll-free, 1-800-996-2848. It's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Don't forget, coming up tonight at 8, right after the World Cafe, Jeremiah's got Pickin' and Grinnin' and the Borealis Bluegrass Breakdown. And until tomorrow, have yourself a great day. Be safe and hug the kids.
Hoso, this is Wade Fernandez, Wichiwin Apiece Mahuao from the Menominee Nation.
Hello, this is Alejandro Escovedo from Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm Amy Lou Harris.
Hi, this is Taj Mahomes.
Hello, this is Arlo Guthrie.
Hey, this is Conrad Lozano from Los Lobos.
Steve Earle, and you're listening to Undercurrents.
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 Get carried away on a river of sound with Undercurrents, songs and beats from the Americas and the world. Listen for Undercurrents, Saturdays noon to 6 on 90.3 KNBA.
Jamai, Koyanani Chuganilutin.
You're listening to KNBA Anchorage 90.3 FM.